Excuse me, you say it's first raised, where?
Well, maybe it's not first raised. I thought section 16 was where we began first to get into the...
I have it on page 2.
Oh, we've thrown all that out.
That's been discarded.
Thrown out.
Mr. Chairman, let me throw up a matter of general policy.
Presume I'm right.
That I'm mindful of both what Judges Hargraves and Bobrake were talking about, and listening all these several months to the where the major concerns seem to be. It seems to me that at the very least, perhaps maybe this ought to be all we do this time. I don't know. But at the very least, we ought to perhaps require findings or reasons be given in those cases where a minimum mandatory is imposed by the court that is in excess of the matrix. Right. No. In excess of the matrix. Now, my recollection is the testimony indicated that there were some cases where the minimum mandatory was, in fact, within the matrix. Few, not very much, but some. And that there were a large number of cases that went to the parole board that had a minimum mandatory, little or no reasons were given. The board really had nothing to go on in making their judgment. And those were the cases most often overturned. Conversely, in those cases, in those judges, like Representative Scavera's judge, went to great detail in providing findings, reasons for exceeding the matrix, those cases were upheld. So it seems to me that at a very minimum, it would be good public policy to require findings in those cases.
I agree with what Representative Lombard said. However, I think the problem is somewhat more acute than that. As he says, the judges who make the findings are rarely overturned. Then we look at the situation of whether or not the judges ought to be required to make findings, and then we learn that the judges are already required to make findings. And then if you talk to the judges, they will tell you that they are already making findings. So apparently the judges feel that they're making findings sufficient to inform the board, and the board finds that they're not sufficient. The difficulty I see is that if we become real or very specific on what kind of findings are to be made, I think the judges are then exercising a kind of mechanical function. So somehow we have to give them the instructions, or the maybe it's a matter of training, I don't know, that should be carried out by the Supreme Court, but they need enough information to know what they need to put into those findings to make them adequate. Because I think they think that the judges believe they're doing the job.
Representative Lombard, your suggestion would be, that where a court exercises its power to specify the minimum period of confinement, and that minimum exceeds the range under the matrix, the court should specify
say they should make findings.
I think that they trying to find the provision here in the bill, I think. Linda, where is the provision that we were monkeying with in the bill here still in the draft relating to court's power to set minimum mandatory?
The one that had to do with
Section 8.
Yeah.
Section 8, okay. Section 8, yeah. Seems to me that where the court exercises its authority under 144.110, and where the mandatory minimum sentence is beyond the limits of the appropriate range, then I think it's certainly appropriate that we require the court make findings so that these be in writing, they become part of the, I don't know whether Judge Barron sends a letter, I guess, but a fairly detailed letter. Mechanically, I'm not sure how far we would go and what we would require, but I think that under those circumstances, it's certainly appropriate to require those findings. I guess my feeling is that where the judge is simply giving an indeterminate sentence, there is a PSI, we can read into that situation that it's ordinary, that it fits the matrix, and that the parole board's decision, I don't know that they need any additional help, any additional assistance. And I don't know, as a matter of public policy, that we need to require the court to go in and go to any great length in that sentence. But I do think we need the reasons why we're going to exceed the appropriate range.
I agree with that, but do I misunderstand the present law? I thought that the judges were already required to make those findings. I've had judges say that. They some think that. Is this a different case? Are they not required to do it?
The statute simply says now that the judge will state the reason for it.
Don't agree with you.
How? Let me ask Judge Mulberry.
That requirement, I think, extends to sentencing generally.
Yes, that's correct.
When you impose an indeterminate sentence without regard to the minimums, the statute says the court shall state on the record the reasons for the sentencing.
Right. Yeah.
Yep.
I wouldn't change that.
Some judges interpret that differently. Some believe that's a mandate to make actual findings, and others say it's no more than saying you're a bad person. Those kind of issues.
Well, I think that helps focus it, because now we know a little bit more about why they don't understand what it is they're supposed to do. If we have to use the word findings, then let's use the word findings. I don't know if that will get you any more. But.
Well, Mr. Chairman, the one thing that has been brought to our attention that we might wish to avoid, I think if there's a formal mandate to make findings, then there's certainly grounds for some sort of an appeal on the inadequacy of findings in sentencing. And it's not my intention just to create a procedural loophole or a point to attack, but it is, as my two colleagues have previously said, a fundamental need to have the trier of fact who is at the scene point out the peculiarities or the particulars of this case that merit that sentence, so that we can more readily avoid ex parte communications after there's a parole board, and that we can more readily, between the sentencing report and the judge's findings, set the matrix and gain greater accuracy between similar cases from different jurisdictions. And that if you simply commit someone to the custody of the corrections division for the term set within the statutory range and say no more or very little more, it haven't really helped the process very much. By comparing what it is about your case with, so the parole board can make a comparison with somebody else's case. And I understand the judge's complaints that were made here, that they don't want to just be the persons who give the parole board the grist for their mill in sort of a mechanical way, but I think they ought to appreciate that it actually improves the likelihood the parole board will carry out within the matrix what it is the judge feels about that defendant. And to that end, maybe what we ought to say is with respect to all cases, and not just the ones that Representative Lombard is limiting himself to, that the current statute which says shall give reason, I think it's shall rather than may, isn't it? It is mandatory. And yet in some cases there are, I mean the record probably is almost silent in some cases, I'm told. That what we really, this committee would like to accomplish is a communication on the record from a person who's in a position to know to the next body who has to carry out the sentence so that we don't get into other problems. And that I think we're all impressed that those who have done it beyond the call have succeeded in getting their way more times than not in getting the right set. So I think it's just a function of communication from one branch to the next. I'm sure there are judges who are angry with prosecutors who don't bring in all the information they have to make a better case, and that there are prosecutors who are angry with police who don't communicate all the information they have to make a better case. And so it goes right down through the criminal justice system, and now we're getting up toward the top end, the correctional end of it, and all we're asking, I think, is for a very basic, give to me the best reasons and findings you can for me to carry out your sentence as a parole board member judge, and I will do that. And I'm not sure how you formalize that. I'm not sure, having gone through the same conversation in this committee and the task force, that I would know how to sit down and do other than state, as we've tried a couple of times, the two or three minimum things, and simply say, maybe we ought to say, shall elaborate, shall give reasons and elaborate. Because that's really what we want, is the elaboration. I mean, give us the thinking.
Well, I wonder if we would be smart, however, Representative Smith, to move in a little more limited fashion at this time and to concentrate on those cases where, in fact, the judge is purporting in a very specific way to determine the period of confinement as opposed to letting the matrix make that determination. It seems to me where the matrix is making that determination, while it might be helpful in some cases to have the court's formal findings on factors pertinent to the matrix, it seems to me a less urgent situation than where the court is in effect overriding the matrix, consciously overriding the matrix, and I think by this proposal would be forced to say why in a fairly specific way.
Let me make a conceptual motion then to ORS 144 and 110. And the gist of the conceptual motion would be, and this is in section 8 of the bill, so or of the draft, so I guess that's where the amendments would be. We'd take out the current language that's in there, but we could still use section 8 for my motion. And that would be to the effect that where the court imposes a mandatory minimum sentence that is beyond the limits of the appropriate range established for the offense pursuant to ORS 144-780, I think that's the correct language, that the court shall make specific findings of the aggravating factors or the matters in aggravation which the court believes I'm getting hung up my own language, but the effect of which the court believes give rise to the rationale or support the court's rationale for exceeding the matrix. Justifying the, well, in the court's mind, it's a subjective thing, no question about it. And I think we're asking the court perhaps to put down in writing some subjective considerations that comes to the court's mind. I mean, it may
sit there and look at the defendant and say, throughout the trial, the defendant showed absolutely no remorse in this case, but in fact was laughing, ridiculing the victim, so on and so forth. Or, you know, I don't know what goes on, but I can imagine some of the things that may go on in the court's mind. Make the court put down those factors regarding the defendant and the circumstances of the offense. But it so aggravate the situation that the court feels that the range ought to be exceeded. I don't think any friendly amendments along
the
way on that.
But I think the best we can do right now is deal with it conceptually and then just try to work it out.
I mean, committee members have other words or phrases.
I think he's on the right track. I do think that Representative Smith had a good point. When, if we refer to these as findings, it may pour into it something that we don't intend to pour. So maybe if we can stick with the reasons rather than, I don't know if that's going to help us get off that or not, but instead of making findings, state reasons.
I think your word even was, and you can do it this way, shall give justification
for justification, yeah.
I want it in writing, though.
Yeah, it's got to be in writing.
The point is that it's got to be in writing.
It could be on the record of the, not just transcript, you're talking about a separate written order.
I think it's wise to have the, you know, although the court may state on the record, bing, 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 which is, I recall, our judges frequently go down a list of things that they considered. I think that ought to be reduced and can be reduced to writing and ought to be part of the documentation that goes with the defendant. Now, Judge Bonebrake's got any suggestions. If you got any suggestions or thoughts that would be helpful or make your job easier on this, I think you get the gist of what we're thinking. But
he'd like us to table the motion. I don't think he's here to help. In a polite way.
Maybe Linda could say the draft.
Let's deal with it conceptually at this point. We understand that we'll confer with Judge Bonebrake and others in signing the language before it comes back. We might even prepare a couple of alternatives for the committee to look at, because these are somewhat different directions. Justification is different from specific findings or whatever.
But I think I agree, Mr. Chairman, that what I'm getting to is justification. In other words, why did you override the range? And you can call them any fancy word you want, but it's reasons why you overrode the range. And it's obviously...
Or to put it another way, it seems to me, it's what facts make the range inadequate in this case?
That's right.
Talking about the set.
The discussion of the conceptual amendment. Linda?
One question. Is it the intent then that those findings be put in some document that the court is required then, if I understood you correctly, to send to the parole board?
Well, it becomes part of a record that ultimately ends up in the hands of the parole board.
That was sort of another issue, though, as I understood it, whether it's part of the transcript and whole transcript should be conveyed to them, or whether there should be a separate document that somehow is, where it gets put and whether it stands as a separate document from just generally stating it on the record. You said put it in writing, but if you mean in a document, and then there was the question of whether the parole board has to seek it from the court or the court send it to the parole board, and that issue is raised in sections of the bill.
Well, I think I would interpret your thrust of your motion, Representative Lombard, to require that it be reduced
through
a form that would be submitted to the board rather than through a board request.
Yeah, I'm afraid that you may...
Part of the record going to the board.
With a transcript, you may run into the same problem that we have on this committee, trying to explain ourselves. And that is,
Speak for yourself.
Well, let's hear it.
This committee?
This committee, yeah.
Discussion of motion. Is there any objection?
Maybe I should ask at this point for Representative Lombard to try and explain himself again.
I'll tell you, Representative Smith, I'll reduce it to writing. I tell you, at the time, I sent it to the parole board.
That covers all of the specific issues that Representative Lombard, Linda and I reviewed over lunch and preparation for the meeting. Is there anything else at this time with neighbors and Smith?
What about the issues raised by the inmates? I think most of us have gotten a letter that they thought some of their bills were going to be incorporated into this bill, and specifically the good time provisions in 2813. We have a gentleman before us the other day saying he thought this was a vehicle for their bill and thought he had some kind of a commitment to that.
Well, yeah, this would be the appropriate vehicle for such changes, but didn't we, I thought we had independently considered 2813 and decided we'd adopt support.
That's right. That may be, I just, since we had them come here and also since I've received the letter, and I know there were other issues even besides 2813.
That was it.
But we did raise them. I don't want this bill to go out and coming ignored.
Right. We did, as a matter of fact, mention that at lunch, and I, as I said, I think at that time we...
Should I offer the governor's amendment at this time?
Governor's amendment? Well, that one? Why don't you wait until the final works? One last thing. There is on page 11, as Linda reminded us, there are some other situations in which there's a proposal to require certain additional information. Dangerous offender, life sentence, minimum, or felony involving the death of a victim.
Mr. Chairman, one thing I intended to include in my motion, and I don't know whether we did cover that, by our later amendments and consecutive sentencing. Linda, did we, with amendments and consecutive sentencing, cover the requirement of findings there? We did we not? Or did we not? Now, it seems...
It wasn't that section on consecutive sentencing.
Yeah, doesn't that... It has a requirement in it, I believe.
Yeah, we amended the last subparagraph of that section to reference back to the findings required in subsection 4.
Oh, that's right.
Well, in any event, I think on a consecutive sentence situation, we need to have findings if there is going to be a consecutive sentence.
Well, I think we've covered
that. I think that was understood.
We have that covered now.
All right. But these others that you're talking about, let's see.
Hazel is familiar. Do this. Linda, would you, if there's no objection, would you make a note of these other issues raised in sub 2, starting at line 20, page 11, and we'll plan to discuss those further with Hazel before the bill comes back to us.
Mr. Chairman.
Yeah.
Do judges, under Representative Lombard's findings or reasons, motion, do judges always know by virtue of their actions that they are exceeding the range? Or is it potential that they have to sit down and do some calculation and actually determine that they are or are not exceeding the range?
If there's a PSI, it's shown in the PSI.
It's shown in the PSI.
There is a PSI.
Yeah.
If there is a PSI, then there is a
Rough matrix calculation, but what it doesn't take into account, again, is the findings and aggravation or mitigation that the parole board may make. So we have the starting number, but it doesn't take into account all of the factors that the parole board may take into account. So.
May I inquire on a couple points?
Yeah.
Is it possible, Judge Bonebrake, that you could want to exert your authority to use a mandatory minimum and you wouldn't just instantly know whether that was greater than the range? I mean, you'd actually have to sit down and spend some time to figure out whether this is an appropriate case to make justification.
Yeah, although the easier remedy for a judge probably would be simply every time he imposes a minimum to make the findings and not take the time to make the calculations. Just assume that it's going to be, it may be, when the case, the defendant's incarcerated and the parole board holds a hearing, that they'll find that the minimum was within the range. They may make findings in aggravation that will enhance the period of time, find that it was within the range. But instead of making all those calculations, I personally would simply choose to, in imposing a minimum sentence, go ahead and make the findings and not worry about the matrix.
I think this was given to us by the Corrections Division on only a document, Minimum Terms in Oregon. It shows in 1982 that there were 1,912 new commitments, of which 796, or 42%, set forth minimum terms.
I understand.
So we're really asking, I would guess, that judges make justification in approximately 42% of the cases.
That number is increasing, I know, from...
And it's going up, yeah, it's a steady...
Also, in answer, I think, to one of the questions that came up regarding statistics, there's a figure that they're presently overriding something like 30%, so mm-hmm. I calculated something like 240 a year. Can I make one observation, Mr. Chairman, that I made previously, and that is by requiring the findings to support a minimum sentence, what's going to happen, I believe, is that you will get lists of aggravations, and it may be that the result of that is that the parole board's inclination to override those will be reduced.
Right.
I mentioned that before, and that we may be then stuck with an increased problem of prison population. We've heard from Hazel Hayes previously that the minimums that they override frequently are those not supported by findings. All she really needs is the findings to support. She wants to know what's in the judge's mind. And in my experience, at least, most of the commitments to the state institution with minimum sentences are aggravated cases. Those are the ones that the judge imposed the minimums on. And so what you're going to get is a list of aggravation in the findings. And it may well have a result of reducing the override by the parole board. It could have some impact on populations. We may be back here the next session 2 years from now with more of a problem, population, minimum sentences, that sort of
thing. I think you make a good point functionally. Maybe we ought to do is forbid the entrance.
Well, it does, by their rule, as I understand it, they're bound by those findings, I've heard, and it will, frankly, tie their hands. They'll lose some flexibility in those cases where they now exercise some degree of flexibility in judgment.
So,
if they're bound by rule, I have an idea that it will result in a reduction in the overrides.
Judge, I tell you, the concern is for the number of beds, and I appreciate that, but as a judge, I don't know that you should have any other concern than that.
That was the reason I phrased it as an observation.
Okay.
Smith, I personally, not speaking for all judges, and I've said this before, I favor the concept of judges making findings when we impose some extraordinary penalty, a minimum or a consecutive. I think it's justified, and I see that's the direction you're taking. But I also, the observation that I made is that probably what you're going to get is a list of aggravations. They'll be justified in those cases, isn't it?
But won't we hopefully get your justifications, which may amount to nothing more than aggravations, compared to another circuit's aggravations? And those should tend to fall into patterns for you as opposed to some other judge's pattern. And pretty soon the parole board will start weighing what is the most aggravated versus the least aggravated when making their bed space decisions.
But at least we will have some record that begins to compare a bad actor in Washington County against a bad actor in Lane County, or one who actually came through both counties and got sentenced by two judges. I think we keep going back to trying to bring equity to the system, and we're trying to compare the best of the bad, it sounds like, and we need something to do that with.
We need facts to do that. I don't disagree with that.
Well, we'll prepare the amendment, and we'll have a chance to weigh in on that for the work session. Anything further? Okay. The committee then will be adjourned. Representative Courtney?
The vote's going around. We'll try this thing next Tuesday. I know it's at 6:30. It should be 6 o'clock at my house. We got to get together on the details now.
Running of the
party.
Yeah.
Rutherford wants to use the lobby to pay for it. I don't want that.